Isn't this a sports show?
Something, something, Patrick Mahomes sexy deep ball.
Almost entirely.
If you turn that hot dog sideways, that wiener's gonna fall out.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with the fourth best radio personality in Kansas City.
You see what I'm saying? Whenever the bun enters your mouth.
On 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Unclench your butt muscles. Exhale deeply. Let's talk about it.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
I would come in here every day and be like, boy, it sure is good that I've got this place to fix my droopy wee-wee. Every day I would say that.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Thank you, Beards, for the most incriminating introduction to the show that we've ever had. That one was absolutely graphic. The theme there is troublesome, but I'm glad that we have it. Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City, live from No Other Pub. I say welcome back because I feel like this is the third entry in a trilogy of shows that will be forever remembered for the location that we're at. We're still down here one more day at the Power and Light District, tucked back stage right on the second floor up on the balcony in No Other Pub. Not the balcony in No Other Pub, but in the balcony of Power and Light. You'll find it. It's not terribly difficult to navigate your way around. But we are stage right. And right now, I wouldn't call it the calm before the storm. It's still definitely full of happy-looking patrons. But I imagine that over the next 2 hours, the activity here at No Other Pub will continue to bubble over as we get ready for KU and K-State, which tips off tonight at 6. So just hang out here. And then from 5 to 6, we'll talk about everything you can be looking forward to in that game. But we're not going to talk about basketball for the next hour. Next hour, we'll talk to Grant Nicholson about K-State and Scott Chasen about KU. We will cover our bases then. But last night, a couple of really good stories came out. Some football stuff that we'll get to in a minute. But first and foremost, Mike Moustakas is back. And that is not a sentence I expected to say. Partially because I just figured he was going to get paid somewhere outside of Kansas City. But as his market continued to slow, it started to make more and more sense. And actually, it was one thing that we almost talked about yesterday and then just ran out of time before we got to. Is would it have made sense for the Royals to sign Mike Moustakas to a one-year deal if the Royals were the team offering him the best one? Or at least the team that offered him one good enough for him to stay here? And my prepared statement on that was, yeah, sure, what's the harm in it? Why wouldn't you bring back Mike Moustakas for 1 year? You're already filling up your roster with a bunch of one-year guys. I saw somebody on Twitter last night say that John Calipari should manage this baseball team because of all the one-and-dones. But if you're already going in the one-and-done direction, which the Royals are doing kind of strangely, and again, we'll touch on all that in a second, but if you're going to go ahead and bring back Alcides Escobar, and you're going to sign John Jay, and you're going to sign Lucas Duda to all these one-year deals, well, you might as well add Mike Moustakas to the mix. It makes your team more fun, it makes your team more relevant, it makes your team more relevant locally, and there's a piece here outside of Salvador Perez, an everyday player that you look forward to playing every day. With apologies to Whit Merrifield, I suppose. But, I mean, there's something to pay attention to. Mike Moustakas is the only thing he can do this year is try to break his own home run record. Maybe he gets to 40 this year. Like, but that's something to talk about. That's something that's going to at least keep the Royals a little more interesting. And also, they are clearly not tanking. Or as someone else on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was, said, they're tanking at tanking. This is the worst tanking job I've ever seen. And I only sort of half facetiously say that because it felt like to me the Royals' job this year was pretty clear. Play your young guys, stink at baseball, get better for next year, get better players next year, and continue to stink a little bit and then stink less and less for the next like 3 years until you have a contender again. That seemed pretty straightforward to me as the order of operations. It seemed pretty straightforward as to how you go through the process of rebuilding a baseball team. And the Royals are kind of in this weird purgatory now where they're definitely not a good baseball team. They're definitely not a contending baseball team nor a playoff baseball team. But they're also not going to be the Marlins this year. They were down at the very bottom of baseball, but then they get a competent outfielder in John Jay, and then they bring back Mike Moustakas. Those guys are good for a couple of wins. That brings you up in the conversation a little bit, but it creates a very interesting place for this team. I had someone tweet me last night and say, hey, the Royals are doing some Moneyball stuff here. And no, they're not, because there will absolutely never be a movie made or a book written about the 2018 Kansas City Royals. But they are getting really good value. Mike Moustakas, Lucas Duda, and John Jay are in Kansas City for a combined $13 million. That's really, really good value. And if that was value you were getting on this team last year, if those were pieces you were adding to make this team take a step from being a 500 baseball team to maybe being, I don't know, in the conversation for an 85-86 win baseball team, crack 90 if you get a couple bounces that go your way, add a couple other pieces, well, then I would have a very different tone. But last year, I had a very clear position on the Royals that I bring up all the time because I was right. And this is something that happens not terribly often and happened, in this case, terribly on point. So the Royals are going to be a 500 team, and then they missed that mark by one. That's a margin of error that I'm happy with. So here's where I am on this Moustakas thing, and here's where I am on the state of the Royals as we look at all these one-year deals. This is a team that is replacing Lorenzo Cain with John Jay, and replacing Eric Hosmer with Lucas Duda. And the original team, with no one to replace, was 500 last year. Some good stretches, some bad stretches, but baseball gives you the truest sample size in sports. And over that giant sample size, they were 500. This year's going to be a below 500 effort for this team. They're going to be a below 500 team at the end. I've already tweeted Cody Tapp. We've talked on this show. He's come in and talked about Wheelie Bad, the wheel with the punishments for losing bets. I've already staked a claim. I will take this team as below 500, and I hope Cody takes it, because frankly, it seems like a bit of a cakewalk. Because again, this team is certainly better than it was a week ago. It's better than it was yesterday. It's better than it was a month ago. These recent signings are good, and I'm happy that they're making moves that are going to keep this team more interesting and more entertaining in a way that I simply was not expecting them to be coming into this year. But that's me being selfish. That's me as someone that's going to talk about them a bunch for the next several months. I don't see how this team loses Lorenzo Cain and loses Eric Hosmer and replaces them with John Jay and Lucas Duda, and that's a team that somehow gets better than they were last year. The math obviously doesn't work out. And I don't want to, you know, pee anybody's punch bowl here. I don't want to crush any Royals fans who are very excited about this. I'm excited for it also. But I actually think that perhaps the best case scenario here plays out like this. Let me just give you the blueprint. Mike Moustakas is here for one more year, or at least for definitely one more year. You can open it up again next year, I suppose. But he's here for one more year, and at the All-Star break, he's got 20, 25 home runs. He's hitting pretty well. He's playing a decent third base. He is certainly an asset in Major League Baseball. Dream scenario, Lucas Duda is doing some of the same thing. He's bringing some power. He's holding down the fort at first base. He's playing every day. Maybe he gives you 15 homers. And just an overall, a nice year at first. John Jay continues to be a perfectly good outfielder that can hit at the top of your lineup. He will give you no power, but he may give you a decent on-base percentage. And he just gives you a perfectly decent outfield bat and outfield glove. The All-Star break, it's hitting pretty well. He's getting on base. He's filling a gap. This is where the Royals are at the All-Star break. The best case scenario for the Royals is at the All-Star break, somebody who needs a third baseman calls up the Royals and says, hey, here's our fourth and seventh best prospects in our system. Maybe, hey, here's our second best prospect. We think we can win the World Series this year, but we need a better bat at third base than the guy we have. And then so the Royals get a mulligan on trading Mike Moustakas at the deadline, something they should have done last year. If John Jay and Lucas Duda are having the seasons that I just described, somebody who needs an outfielder rings you up and says, hey, we're not going to pay you a king's ransom for John Jay, but we are interested, and you're not winning anything this year. Even if the Royals, at this point, All-Star break, maybe the Royals have, maybe they're scratching near 500 again, as they were last year. A little below, though. No one's really fooling themselves this time. You got a 450 baseball team at the break. You know what? Yeah, we'll take 75 cents on the dollar for John Jay, because we don't really need this. Aceytus Escobar is not going anywhere. But what about Lucas Duda? Look, everybody can use a bat. Maybe an American League team wants a DH. Maybe somebody loses a first baseman in injury. Yay, Lucas Duda's available if you're interested. All right, here you go. So now what the Royals have done is they've made some smart, frugal bets for guys they can ultimately dump at the deadline for more long-term solutions. And again, what if it doesn't work? So what? You are taking very smart bets. $13 million for the three guys we just talked about is not breaking the bank. And it sets you up very well at the trade deadline if you can find a couple partners that are looking for something in that category. I feel really good about that. I think the Royals should too. I hope that's something that they have in mind, because I really don't think this team is going to be even 500. And I don't think there's a reason to put those expectations on this team. I think putting those, if you are putting those unrealistic expectations there, and full disclosure, I have not talked to one single person in media or listened to one single radio show today since Mike Moustakas re-signed last night. So I do not know if anyone is saying the Royals are going to be 500 or better or a contender or whatever. I have no idea if anyone is saying that. But if anyone is, I'll happily take the other side on that one. Because I remember what I saw last year, and this team's going to be worse. And also, in all likelihood, this team should be looking, not in all likelihood, but in all logic, this team should be looking to move their best pieces at the deadline, whoever that is. Because you don't have long-term control over Mike Moustakas. Mike Moustakas isn't Salvador Perez, a guy that you can have maybe still be on this team 3-4 years from now whenever you're really contending again. The guy that can really set the tone for the young guys. Mike Moustakas is a mercenary for one more year. Also, if this plan plays out, and just where I'm at right now, if this plan plays out for the Royals, if they do end up making moves at the deadline, then you know what happens in the second half of the season? You're just playing, finally, you're just playing all of the young guys. That's what you should be doing in the second half of the season either way. So it's all right, hey, Raul Mondesi, Hunter Dozier, literally anybody that has an argument to make, Ramon Torres, buckle up, grab a glove, you've got the last 80 or so games to show us where you're at. Gives those guys half a season of minor league play, half a season of continued development and very specific targeted coaching, and then the second half of the season, bring them up to the big leagues and see what you can do. I think this makes the most possible sense. I think this is a great situation if the Royals follow that plan. If they devote this whole season to letting John Jay and Mike Moustakas and Lucas Duda and Alcides Escobar, they devote this season to letting all of those guys just play out a year and they try to give you a nice 72-win team, I will be disappointed at the end of the season. Because that doesn't help you this year. Or it helps you this year, but does not help you next year or the year after. And that's where you're supposed to be right now. You're supposed to be setting yourself up for the best long-term successes that you can have. And I'm not seeing that from the situation where the Royals just let these guys play out the year. And again, I don't mean to come in the day after Moustakas signs his extension and just tell you all of the reasons this is terrible. It's not terrible. It's good. It's a good move. I'm happy that they did it. It's 1 year, $6.5 million, and there's a mutual option the second year, and both sides I'd have to agree to that. That's what mutual means. Congratulate. Thank you, myself, for explaining the word mutual to everyone. But it makes a lot of sense, but I just think it makes more sense if you look at it in the ways that this can still help you in the long term. All these moves make your team better this year, but only this year. Is there long-term room for expansion? Long-term room for this team getting better? There is, if you get those performances, if your cheap lottery tickets, if your frugal investments pan out, then absolutely, because you cash in your chips for some young assets. I hope that's what the Royals have in mind. I think it makes a lot of sense, and I'm glad for hopefully 80-some games of Mike Moustakas. If you get more than that, lovely. I guess not too much more than that, though. About that. About 80 would be fine. I'm excited for 80 games of Mike Moustakas. I hope he hits 25 homers before the All-Star break. And then I hope they find the trade partner that's willing to pay a reasonable price to rent him for the last half of the season, the playoffs. I think that's the scenario that makes the most possible sense for the Royals. Again, I hope they have that in mind. I don't know that they do. It seems plausible. But I also have not aligned with Dayton Moore very much in the last, 8 months or so. I wanted to sell the deadline, and they didn't. I wanted the youth movement to take over now, and it's not going to. But one way or another, this is the setup they have. Again, if they end up making these moves at the deadline, I will not say a bad word about Dayton Moore's plan here. Except for the LCS Escobar, I think it still makes no sense. If they turn it over in the second half to Raul Mondesi, I'll feel much better. I don't necessarily expect LCS Escobar to do anything other than start 162 games at this point. I will not hold my breath.
First in the order.
Yes, I will
swing
not hold
every
my breath.
First pitch.
I will not hold my breath on anything other than exactly that.
Yep.
Then Alcides Escobar hitting leadoff, swinging at the first pitch of every game, and doing that exactly 162 times.
Except it won't be like the World Series where you hit it inside the park home run on the first pitch. It'll be like...
No. Swinging strike.
Swing, miss, swing, ground out, pop fly.
He's taking walks this year, remember? Didn't this come down the line at some point? Alcides Escobar is working on taking walks.
This is the dugout future. When he strikes out.
That's a very good joke, Beards.
Thank
That's
you.
That is an extremely good joke.
You put it on the T-ball tee for me perfectly.
Yes. I'm glad to have set you up. Now, if you were Alcides Escobar, you still would have swung and missed that, but tee notwithstanding. That was unbelievably serious Royals content, so I'm glad that you were able to sort of punctuate it with a joke. Because that I needed it.
That's how bad they're going to be next year, huh?
No. Wait. What? Wait. Why? Why would you?
I don't know. The Royals in general.
Say that again.
The Royals in general needed to make a joke to bring the levity to the sadness.
Oh no! No, that wasn't about the Royals. That was about my situation.
Well, that
now,
too.
Not that No Other Pub is sad. No Other Pub is amazing. Someone is actually bowling, I believe. I think I heard bowling pins earlier. And again, there's nothing I want to do more than have a bowling contest with Charlie. I don't know where Charlie is currently. And that's something that is kind of disconcerting about being here now. Again, has nothing to do with No Other Pub. This is about this part's about me. I want to make this about myself. At least in the studio, Beards appears to be listening, and like he has headphones on.
Charlie just no.
No, well, Charlie's not usually there. Once a week. Well, a fifth of the time. But whenever I'm in the studio, I'm at No Other Pub right now, if you're just tuning in. No Other Pub at Power and Light. No Other Pub's amazing. But doing a radio show here is weird, because I'm sitting opposite, like, a big table of a bunch of people having food, and I'm surrounded, obviously, by a bunch of people just having a good time. But there's no one else at the table with me today. Wednesday, Charlie was here basically the whole time. Yesterday was pretty empty. Today it's just me sitting here in a not packed but relatively nicely full No Other Pub.
It sounds pretty full.
Yeah, it's just like it's a full restaurant. Yesterday was a freaking rave.
Yes.
At this point. But the thing that's weird about it, that I'm not self-conscious because I have all of the equipment and I'm wearing a headset, obviously. I'm not self-conscious about it. But the thing that makes me sort of realize that what I'm doing is weird is that no one around me is listening. Like, and they couldn't. It's too loud around me. I'm not. This is not anyone's fault. But I just very much feel like I'm sitting here talking to myself. But I'm also doing it in public in a way that's not even like the podcast. Whenever I just used to do podcasts by myself, there was an element there of like, I mean, I can just kind of freewheel and I can stop and restart if I lose a train of thought or something.
The power
of
editing.
There's no pressure. Right, there's no pressure. It's all editable and everything. Here, though, I'm in public. There are people working. There are people eating and partying and drinking. And they're just like chicken strips passing me by.
Ooh.
And it's yeah, no, I know. Yeah, I'm aware. Ooh.
Also, I had some chicken for lunch.
I can't have any. You what?
I had some chicken for lunch.
I had ramen for breakfast for the third consecutive day.
Oh, boy.
I am, however, getting extremely good at making ramen. Like, I found a couple of key ingredients, and I really have gotten very good at really dressing up ramen into something that if you got it from, like, Noodles and Company or whatever, you would not complain. And I mean that. I am a ramen expert at this point. But I would rather have food from no other pub.
Yeah.
Also, again, it looks like I'm talking to myself, and I am. I mean, that's what radio is mostly. But I can't even, like, pretend to make eye contact with anybody on purpose because I know they're not listening. And so I just sort of stare around. Because also, I can't just look at my computer screen. I can't block out. I'm not a horse wearing blinders. I'm going to look around at all of the chicken strips. And people playing beer pong. I want to see how this experience is going. I want to watch what's happening and then pick a winner. But I also have to talk without leaving dead air, because that's literally my entire job.
Yeah,
not my entire
that'd
job.
That'd be nice.
It's the most important part of my job, I think. Or is it this facet of my job? I'll put it this way. If I leave dead air, it's even worse than how I usually do the show. So I have to keep that from happening. But I'm not being surrounded by butts today, which is nice. Yesterday was the beards. I thought of the. You remember this conversation yesterday, where I told you it was like the trash compactor.
Yes, I remember
in Star
this.
Wars.
I have that visual burned in my head.
Yeah, it was drunk dudes, but just like backing up towards me. Well, I realized this later. I was retelling the story to Charlie, and I'd like to retell that joke. Or not that joke. I'd like to retell that story, but with a different dismount at the end. So I'm going to just pretend, theater of the mind, that I'm having this happen to me again. could you count me in, please? Could I get like a nice 3, 2, 1 into my story?
3, 2, 1.
So I'm out here at no other pub, and I'm surrounded by people having a very good time. There are people just sitting their drinks all over the place. It's now 5:45, and we are at a high level of intoxication for most of these people around me, and they're just moving in butt first. It's like the trash con. It's like being in a trash compactor. The one from Star Wars, and they're just getting like the walls are moving in. But it's not a trash compactor. It's an ass compactor.
Solid,
right?
Yep.
But that took me like 24 hours.
Yeah, sometimes that happens where you think of the joke, you know, 2 hours later.
Yeah, yeah.
I really should have said this.
Yeah, my hope, though, is that if you make any liners, you can just use that one, and no one will know that I was telling the story for a second time.
That's true, although I might just include both of those in there.
I figured that you would. I figured that would probably be the thing that you did. Also, my knee hurts for some reason. Don't know why. That just started.
Okay.
I'm sitting down. I'm not doing jumping jacks and doing this show. I don't know what happened.
Somebody threw a dart into your leg or something?
Oh, you're yes. Wow, how did you know? I hadn't even noticed. There's a dart sticking out of my knee. You felt? Oh no,
that's an issue.
I have bad news, Beards.
What?
Baby Jay is here.
Oh boy.
Oh man. Oh man. Oh man. Oh man. So, have I ever told you about my mascot story from childhood? Have I ever told this on air?
I don't believe so. I know about the Chick-fil-A cow.
No, right, yeah. So I was the Chick-fil-A cow. I have my in-mascot experience. But apparently at a fall festival parade in Wichita when I was little, I don't remember this happening. My mom has retold this story enough times, though. At some point, I was very little. I mean, I was probably 4 or 5, I guess. During the fall festival parade, I might have been younger. During the fall festival parade, there were, you know, whatever, fire trucks and cars throwing candy and whatever going around. And then at one point, there was a Tasmanian devil mascot that came over and was, like, trying to give me candy or say hi or, like, get me a high five or something. And I just started bawling. And I was apparently, like cry screaming the phrase, "No more devil, no more devil, no more devil." And this is the memory that I've been told about over and over. And so I feel like even though I don't now, like, I don't have a front of brain. I don't have a conscious fear of mascots.
But it's just kind of there.
But it's kind of there when I'm like, you know what? Maybe, like, 4-year-old me had a point. Like, what are we doing with mascots anyway?
You just see baby Jaywalker and you're like, oh, no, I should probably go somewhere else just while he's here.
Yes, I feel that way.
Like, you're not running screaming away from him, but it's just kind of like, ooh, I should probably be somewhere else. I've got something to check on. Looks at your watch that's not on your wrist. Oh, I got to be somewhere.
Right. Oh, I have to go according to this watch on my ankle because I am...
Michael Beasley.
Michael Beasley. Thank you. I could not. I almost said Michael Porter, and that would have been wrong. Now, whenever there is a mascot around, I feel the need to keep... keep it in my field of view, and
you don't want to get surprised by a mascot, yeah?
No, I don't, and I don't know. I don't know the layout of another pub well enough. Like, if it sneaks up behind me, I'm gonna punch Baby J in the beak, and that is not the way that I want to make headlines. Obviously, I want to make headlines. I'm in radio. I don't want to make headlines for being the guy that broke Baby J's beak with just a fist.
Can you imagine Baby J showing up to the Jayhawk game later tonight, and he's just got his beak bent upwards?
His beak is concave because it snuck up behind me and I freaked out.
Everybody's just talking to each other and saying, "What happened to Baby J?" And then somebody goes, "Oh, did you hear that Briscoe guy with an E on the end of Briscoe punched him?"
Right, at Jimmy Briscoe with an E. That's not necessarily the way that I want to make headlines.
No.
By assaulting a mascot.
I can see why.
I would rather that than no headlines, I guess, though, right?
Maybe.
But I don't know, it feels like kind of a loss.
See, here's the issue, though. Then you've punched Baby J. All the Jayhawk fans will be mad at you now.
Oh, that's true. I hadn't even thought about the repercussions of having punched the literal mascot for Jayhawk fandom. That would be very bad for my brand. Maybe I would pick up a bunch of K-State Mizzou followers. That might be good.
Maybe.
Like, I feel like that would at least... I don't know, there's a chance of that kind of helping reconcile my... It would really be a heel turn, though, because, like, KU fans like me and non-KU fans are either lukewarm or angry. Speaking of, oh my goodness, I forgot about this yesterday, and then we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and talk about some football stuff. Speaking of lukewarm, the guy that tweeted me this, his name is Luke.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I have to find this. Can I get music on remote, Beards? Can I get some remote music? Well, I look up this tweet. Thank you. Oh, man. This... wrong Luke. This isn't working. Thank you, Jeopardy. Thank you so much for creating the best way for me to stall while looking for tweets. I really wanted to quote this verbatim, and I don't think I'm going to be able to. All right. Forget it. Kill it. Thank you. A guy named Luke tweeted me, because yesterday during the show, I said, I want someone to tweet me and tell me that I suck. I don't want someone to walk by and you're like, "Hey, 10 sucks," which someone did yesterday. That's not about me. If you're going to be hassling me while I'm live on radio, at least make it be that you don't like me at all. And then someone tweeted me and said, you know, yeah, I don't like you. You're a KU homer who works in Kansas City because you can't get a job anywhere else. And, I retweeted him because I was very happy to have gotten a certified guy who disliked me personally. Also, he was an East Mizzou guy, and I'm not a KU alum, nor am I a KU fan, but I talk about and cover KU more than other local college basketball teams because scoreboard. Like, what am I? Like, of course I do. Whatever. And we're gonna have a K-State guy on today. No Mizzou guys today, but I did try to get to Brandon Kiley. He's just busy, so you can sleep well at night, Luke, knowing that I tried to talk to Brandon Kiley, and it wasn't possible with our schedules. So, also your team lost, which neither KU or K-State's team did. So it makes it's hard to preview today's Missouri game because they didn't play, or they're not playing. Hope you're happy, Luke. This is for you. Thank you again for all of your love and support. All right, so we're live here at No Other Pub down in the Power and Light District. I have a feeling it's going to be absolutely hopping here in about an hour and a half whenever KU and K-State tip off. So come down to No Other Pub at P&L, stage right of the stage, obviously. And whenever we come back, we'll talk about all the football things that have happened, because that's also interesting.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
This has been the most technically challenging week of this show's existence. Fair?
Beyond fair.
Like, it's a blowout.
Runaway. Unanimous MVP.
The unanimous worst technical week in the history of this show. Not even Beards' fault.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Oh, and I will tell you whenever it's Beards' fault.
Thank you.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City. I'm Josh Briscoe. You knew that. It's in the liner. Whenever I'm on remote, I just start going into autopilot. I didn't need to tell you what my name was. You know. My name's Josh Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. I'm here at No Other Pub at the Power and Light District, stage right up on the second floor. You can find No Other Pub, and it seems like a blast. It's the most interesting environment I've ever done radio in, with apologies to Menards. And I think we're back at Menards for a show sometime in, like, April. So I look forward to...
That sounds familiar.
I look forward to being the prodigal son of Menards. I was going to say they treated us well. They didn't really treat us anything, which is fine. I'm totally okay being told, go over to that table and talk, and then we'll just leave you alone. That's totally fine with me. We're here at No Other Pub, and we've been here for a few days. I really like it here. I would like to hang out after the radio show. We'll see if that ends up happening. But there have been a lot of interesting things in the world of football recently. And by recently, I mean like the last 2 days. The Los Angeles Rams are the team that I wanted the Chiefs to be, and that's getting hard to swallow. Not only did they make the trade for Marcus Peters, obviously, yesterday they stole Aqib Talib. They got Talib for, I think it was a fifth-round pick from the Denver Broncos. That defense is wild, and it was great last year, and it's getting better. They're adding Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib. Again, this is the team that I want the Chiefs to be. I said Royals because I saw a guy wearing a Royals hat. Again, this is a full sensory experience here. And so that's frustrating because I genuinely wanted the Chiefs to make that Talib move before they traded away Marcus Peters, and then again, especially after they traded Marcus Peters, because I really do think that this team has a window to win now. We talked about this with Seth Kaiser back on Wednesday. This team, with its value at quarterback, has a chance to be contending this year, and especially the next 2 years. And I'm not sure exactly where they're lining up, although apparently Muhammad Wilkerson left Green Bay and New Orleans without a contract, and Kansas City's next on his list of visits. I'm very much down with that as well. This will be more interesting, and he's outside of the secondary that very much needs to be addressed. But this defensive line is also just as porous right now, if not more so, especially if they end up cutting Alan Bailey. So keep an eye on Muhammad Wilkerson. Also, the Seahawks today officially cut Richard Sherman, and I will not be able to withhold my desire for him on this team as well. I think he would make a lot of sense on this team, make a lot of sense what this team needs right now. I don't know if it makes too much sense at this point, but I'm kind of leaning in that direction now of being concerned that maybe it's one of those moves that just makes too much sense for the Chiefs. But that's also on the table. And the Browns today traded for Jarvis Landry for 2 picks. Neither of them are firsts or seconds, and that's all we know at this point as of 4:40 here on Friday. But also there was a tweet just out a few minutes ago. Let's see, I got to scroll back into it. Andrew Brandt tweeted, the teams on the prowl for receivers besides the Browns include the Ravens, Colts, Bears, and Chiefs. And I'm into this. As I've said many, many times before, I'm not into the value of Albert Wilson. I don't think that the Chiefs are going to be able to get the value for him contract-wise that he will actually generate. And Chris Conley is in the last year of his deal. I would absolutely be on board to find someone on the outside that takes some attention away from Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. Maybe if they're on the prowl for a slot receiver to replace Albert Wilson, it would make some sense. But at this point, I think you have enough receivers on this team that can move to the inside. I'd be looking for someone who's able to provide a little bit more than Albert Wilson or an Albert Wilson replacement. So I'm encouraged by that tweet from Andrew Brandt, because this is a place where I think this team still has a little bit of a need. It's not the size of its defensive needs. It's not the size of its need for a number two corner or a defensive lineman, which Richard Sherman and Muhammad Wilkerson would obviously fill both of those roles. Earl Thomas could come in if the Chiefs made that move, which we talked about again with Seth, that I would just be in love with. That would change this defense in a big way. Those are all formative moves that this team could be making, and if they do, the perception of this season changes tremendously, because even if you're extending those guys whenever you bring them in, if you're making moves that are very much for this year, it opens up the window starting now. That's one of the reasons I hated the Marcus Peters trade, because I think he helps you keep this window open in the next 3 years whenever the team should be having their window the most open. But That's something that could be remedied if you are aggressive for Richard Sherman and you figure out a way to stack that contract in a way that gets you some value these next 2 years. Keeps the window open if you bring in a Muhammad Wilkerson or somebody who can really help transform your defensive line. If you bring in a receiver of some sort that continues to make this offense even more deadly. All of these things make a ton of sense. All of these things help you for this year. The question becomes, does Brett Veach want to try to win this year? Is this year a part of Brett Veach's plan beyond setting you up for 2018 and 2019, 2019 into 2020? Does this season matter as far as the results go? Do you think the team has the firepower? And the thing that's difficult is, if you knew what Pat Mahomes was going to be, then you would also know the answer to that question. Because if Patrick Mahomes is going to really struggle, then this team isn't going to be able to contend. If Patrick Mahomes plays really, really well, if he's Deshaun Watson, then absolutely this team can contend. If he's somewhere in between, then it's about the supporting cast. Do you invest in the supporting cast to try to lift him up a level this year? Do you invest in the supporting cast because you think he's going to be Deshaun Watson this year? Either of those two options indicate that you can actually do some real winning. And for me, that's enough. Two out of those three options, breaking in the direction of giving you a chance to win if you invest in the guys around you, that works for me. Brett Veach is also doing some purging that's going to set them up even better for 2019, but I don't think that means you have to punt this season. So all of these free agents in this very busy NFL, someone on Twitter said pre-off season, which is really what it is, this very busy pre-off season, it does not eliminate you from making some smart investments that can help you in this year and next year and the year after. And these 3 years with Pat Mahomes on his rookie contract, these are the 3 years that you can really contend. We're out here live at No Other Pub. If you're not going to make it out for any of the games in the Big 12 tournament, next time you're in Power and Light or you're looking for a place to watch a game or just to even hang out and burn some time, you cannot go wrong coming to No Other Pub. There's beer pong, there's shuffleboard, there's ping pong, and there are bowling lanes. I also think there's a golf simulator in the back, but I haven't been over there yet. The bowling lanes are the things that I think you need to make sure you're paying attention to. I've said all of these things, infinite televisions, and also bowling lanes. So next time you need a place to see or do anything, come to No Other Pub. Talk a little bit more about the Chiefs and the NFL pre-off season that's been whenever we come back here on Almost Entirely Sports.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Inside my own head currently, I'm debating how interested I am in comparing Jason Whitlock to a big, gross seal.
On 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
The Chiefs pre-offseason continues to be something that I'm very interested in for lots of reasons. But it has a bunch of twists and turns, especially just in the perception of where the Chiefs are right now. There was an article out on The Ringer, and the guy like didn't factor in the fact that the Chiefs have already traded Alex Smith, and they're moving on from a whole bunch of guys. They're going to end up freeing up some cap space. So that article was null and void before you even got into the content of it all. And I've had several people on Twitter saying, well, listen, this team needs defense really, really badly. And that's true. And they don't have a first-round pick, and that's true. But I still don't think that this rules out the Chiefs from making a move for a free agent receiver. They'll probably draft a guard. I'm still not terribly high on using a terribly high pick to fill your seventh biggest need, and a need that can very much be helped out by the guys around that guy on the offensive line, and also could be solved by Parker Anger. We'll see. But the pieces here are obviously just like on the table. The questions begin to roll in whenever you start to figure out how you split up the assets, how you decide what do you spend here. I'm just spitballing here, but the fact that they're even bothering to take a visit from Muhammad Wilkerson makes me think that they're willing to spend some money on this defensive line. And it makes sense. You spend some money alongside Chris Jones being cheap for now before his rookie contract ends. And then you add a couple other pieces that are kind of replacement level. Well, all of a sudden, you've got year three of Chris Jones and maybe Muhammad Wilkerson, or that's where your second round pick goes. And then that's backed up by Justin Houston, and then hopefully Dee Ford if he can get healthy at some point, and hopefully improving Tano Passanio. Well, all of a sudden your front seven doesn't look so bad. You want to invest in another pass rusher or an inside linebacker? Still fine with me. You don't invest there highly, but you invest in there for a better than replacement level player. Secondary, you could spend big on Richard Sherman, and you're still not running yourself out of the market for all of your draft picks and a receiver. This team could sign Richard Sherman and could sign Muhammad Wilkerson. I know we're just star chasing right now, but I'm saying this for a reason. This team could sign both of those guys and then spend all of their draft picks at places, other high draft picks at places other than defensive line and cornerback. And maybe you find yourself a young safety towards the top. You can draft the best available player because you can always take another corner. You can always take another defensive lineman. But you can truly take the best available player basically the whole way through. And I am 100% on board with that. I think the Chiefs are in a really good place this year to spend in free agency to fill their biggest needs and to do it with the best caliber of player they can find. And then through the draft, they fill in their sort of second-tier needs. And then back of the draft, you're just taking guys that you want to fill in spots a year or two from now. With that in mind, I think the Chiefs' offseason continues to be set up to be extremely interesting. And it continues to be set up for, I mean, every measure of success, except for they traded Marcus Peters. But where we're at right now is the place that I feel like we're stuck. The offseason altogether isn't going to be able to come out of this clean because they traded Marcus Peters. Like, this is hugely problematic. But I think if you can move on from that, as I've done my best to do and continue to struggle to try to do, then eventually you unbutton a collar, you tug away, try to get a little bit of a breath breathed in, and then this offseason has some really interesting places that it certainly will be going. I'm into what Brett Veach has done everywhere except for the Marcus Peters trade. There is room in both in the salary cap and in the draft picks for the Chiefs to improve everywhere they need to improve. The way they dole out that money and they dole out those draft picks, that's whenever all of this becomes a question. That's when all of this, I guess, you know, hits the fan, if you will. Right here at No Other Pub, Power and Light, stage right. Come by, if not now, Orleans sometime, come watch Chiefs game. I'm guessing it'd be fun. I'd rather be bowling than hosting radio, and I like hosting radio. I can hear my own voice. That's great.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.